Science Magazine of the Air.
It must be coming by Four Corners now.
Oh, now, you come down off that tree. You'll tear the seat your pants again, and I'm just finished mending it.
I see a little smoke, I think.
Oh, this spot.
But didn't you read the papers, Mom? Didn't you see what it said? They're testing a loop, new locomotive on the run. My gosh, everybody's excited about it, even Pop.
Yes, your Pop's just as bad as you. Kids.
Pop says the whole yard's going to be out watching. Golly, that old locomotive of his, what? Boy, it's like a mosquito up against this new one.
Your father's been engineering a number 116 for most 30 years now. He always said it was the best locomotive on the line. Oh, now, now.
He's past the Cummings place. Listen.
Things are always changing. People can't seem to be satisfied with what they got. Speed, speed. That's all they think about now.
You gotta have speed.
Why? What's there? So you can speed faster into your grave?
There she is. Look at her, Mom. The T-Watt. Ah, just look, Mom.
Lynn, see, it looks... Why, it looks like a sinner tampering away from the devil.
It's beautiful, Mom. Green light like a bomb. Here she comes. Wave, wave, Mom.
Oh, my
God.
In the history of science, there are moments of climactic grandeur, split seconds in which the theories and dreams of men are placed in the scales of destiny. We bring you the story of a great moment in the progress of man's mastery of the forces of nature. This is a story of steam and the man who put it to work, James Watt.
James Watt, I never saw such an idle boy. Take a book. Or employ yourself usefully.
Yes, Aunt Martha.
For the last hour now, you have not spoken a word. All you do is set the lid off that kettle and then put it back on again. You're not ashamed of spending your time in so stupid a fashion.
I am ashamed.
But when you were a wee manny and you did things like that, Jeannie, it could be understood. But now you're grown and a man. Time is too precious to waste.
I was wondering, Aunt Martha.
About what?
Steam.
Steam?
What is steam, Aunt Martha?
Oh, a foolish question.
Is it?
Aye, and one I've no intention of answering. Now fetch you a good book and sit beside me. Over here, so that we will not have to light another candle. What is steam? Why, that's like inquiring, what is life? The question is unnatural. You must never ask it again.
That is one of my most cherished remembrances. Aunt Martha sitting next to the flickering candle with the shadows curling around her hair. Her black shawl knotted tight around her shoulders and a look of horror on her face. It was not right to think about natural phenomena. It was a waste of time. And a waste, Aunt Martha would say, was criminal. But we must not think too harsh of Aunt Martha. She was the product of her times. The year 1750 was a time of tension and anxiety in the British Isles. It was a time of ignorance, sustained by tradition and deepened by bigotry and prejudice. Only 23 years before, the last legal trial for witchcraft had been held in Scotland, and a poor old hag had been stuffed into a pitch barrel and burned to death. The economy of the country was chaotic. The coal mines of Cornwall and Wales had been dug so deep that water seepage had forced the closing of some of the best producers. Unemployment, poverty, hunger, bitterness were the symbols of the halfway point of the 18th century. This was the second.
Jimmy! Jimmy!
Here, Father. At my workbench.
Must you hide yourself away in the attic?
I like to work here. It's quiet.
Hmm. What are you making?
Oh, nothing. A model.
A model of what?
One of Mr. Newcomen's atmospheric engines.
Hmm. Let me see.
It's not very good.
But where did you get the plan?
I have no plans. There was a picture of one in the book on mechanics I bought last week.
How does it work?
Oh, it's simple. There's a piston set in a cylinder, you see? It acts like a plunger. A counterweight lifts the piston up in the cylinder body like this. Steam is then forced into the bottom of the cylinder. As the steam enters, it forces the air out. Then a stream of cold water is injected into the cylinder. This cools the steam, causes a vacuum to form, and the piston is sucked down, so.
Genius.
It's not a good engine.
No?
No. It uses up too much fuel to perform its tasks. It's too slow and unreliable.
Hear, hear.
You're laughing at me.
No. No, Jamie. Listen, lad. All the hope I once had for myself, I have now only for you. The things I plan to do, the work I set, the dreams I have, Jamie, fine, sparkling dreams, they're not mine any longer. They must be yours.
I've never heard you speak such words, Father.
No, I've been too busy being a failure. Jamie, lad, the time has come for us to talk to each other with our hearts.
Yes, Father?
Since your mother passed on, I felt it was wrong to keep you here in Greenock, suffocated as I've been by the natural limitations of a small town. I've watched you, Jamie. Watched you with your tools. You're a mechanic, a fine one. You have a fortune at your finger ends, but not here at Greenock.
You think I should go away?
It'll break my heart, lad, to see you go, but go you must.
Where?
Go to Glasgow. It's a large city where there'll be enough opportunities for you to profit by your talents. Your mother's cousins, the Muirheads, are there. They'll welcome you.
I don't think it's right to leave you alone.
Alone I prefer to be. My heart is sick with emptiness for your mother. I'm not fit company for a lad of your temper. Besides, it was she would have wanted. She spoke to me of this before she left.
All right, Father. I'll do as you say. I'll go to Glasgow.
Glasgow was a new world for me. The busy streets, the incessant noise, the smell, the tenements. A new world, and one that made me ill. I attempted to secure employment with some mathematical instrument maker, but there was no such mechanic in all of Glasgow, so I went to work for a man who called himself an optician.
You'll be required to sell and mend spectacles, repair fiddles, like fishing rods and tackle, dress trout and salmon flies, repair clocks, 2 and 6 pence a day,
and you feed yourself. The only thing of importance that I'll mention about this first sojourn in Glasgow was my acquaintanceship with Dr. Dick, professor of natural philosophy at the university. A kind, sensitive personality. A man of true academic brilliance.
Jamie, this is not the place for the like of you. Your talent is too great for Glasgow. London is where you can obtain the proper teaching of the mechanical arts. I'll give you a letter of introduction to a Mr. Shortay, a friend of mine. He'll take you in hand.
That was 12 days by horseback to London, and then disappointment. It was my intention to seek an apprenticeship with some instrument maker for a period of about a year, and then return to Scotland. Having a little money of my own, and knowing that my father and brother were dependent upon my future earning ability, I found what seemed to be an insuperable obstacle.
Impossible! It can't be done! As an apprentice, you serve the full term of 7 years or nothing.
But, sir, I can't spare the time.
In a hurry, eh?
Well, you don't understand.
I'm not the least curious about your reasoning, young man. Who do you think you are, might I ask? 7 years is the term of apprenticeship, not a day less. And what is more, I'm certain that I'd not be interested in your services, even under those terms. You will find excellent hinges on the door. I suggest you try them.
near the end of my rope. The gray fog of London had soaked into my spirit. I was homesick, hungry, and then, unexpectedly...
Excellent. Very good, young man. One of the best models I've ever seen. You're sure you made this yourself?
Yes, Mr. Morgan. I made it.
I could use talent like yours in my instrument shop.
Oh, sir,
of course, there is the usual 7 years apprenticeship.
I can't do it.
Eh?
It's not that I don't want to, or I can't. Father's sick, and then there's a younger brother of mine. They need my support, sir. I can't ask them to exist on charity while I spend 7 years learning a trade that I know I can master in a tenth of that time.
Yes. I believe you could.
Give me the chance, sir.
Yeah, it's against all the regulations, you know. Very regular. But I think it can be arranged. I'll give you a year's instruction. In return, I shall require your full services and a premium of £20.
£20? Thank you, sir. I'll start at once. Dear Father, thank you for the £20. I know what a sacrifice it must have been to secure it. You may reckon upon the fact that it will be repaid quickly. I'm very lonely. I've not made any friends except among the few workers in the shop. A city, I think, is meant for skinny people with skinny minds. They rush and haggle and each tries to cheat the other. Sometimes I remember the days at Greenock, with Mother smiling as she talked over the hedge to the neighbor. They have no hedges here, just walls, thick, ugly, iron-spiked walls. I miss you. I want to see you. Be careful of your health. My love to my dear brother, your affectionate son.
Jimmy. Yes, come in. Find my son, Jimmy Watt.
Hello, Professor D.
Well, welcome back to Glasgow. How long is it since your return?
A fortnight.
And you're now first coming to pay me a visit?
I'm sorry, sir. I've been occupied since my return.
Oh, getting settled, eh? Ready to open up shop, I take it?
No.
Huh?
I'll open no shop.
But why? I thought that was keenest in your mind. That was why you went to London to learn the instrument-making trade.
That was in my mind, but evidently my own wishes are not important.
I don't understand. Will you have some tea?
Oh, no. Thank you, sir. I cannot put up my shop in Glasgow.
Why not?
The Guild of Hammermen, to which a mathematical instrument maker would belong, refuses to grant me the necessary license.
Eh?
They claim that as I am neither the son of a burgess nor have served a 7 years apprenticeship, I'm not eligible to practice my profession.
Ridiculous!
I beg them for permission to merely rent a small workshop to carry on certain experiments I have in mind. They refuse that, too. So I'm returning to Greenock.
You are not.
But, sir,
no such thing. Absolutely not. Come with me.
What?
Come along. Don't tarry.
Professor Dick.
Good day, sir. This is my young friend, young Jimmy Watt. Jimmy, Professor Robinson.
I'm happy to meet you, sir.
What the devil are you up to, Dick?
The transcript of the university's charter. Where is it? I saw it just the other day.
It's in that cabinet by the window.
Guild Hammerman refuses to grant young Watt here permission to open a mathematical instrument making shop.
Has he the necessary prerequisite?
Here it is. Now, let me see. Charter, University of Glasgow, granted by His Holiness Pope Nicholas II, section 41. Of course.
What are you muttering about, Dick?
Just as I thought. According to the university's charter, the fellows of this college have absolute authority within the area of our building.
Aye, aye, that's right.
Good. Jamie, you will set up your shop right here in the university. Right in this building.
Let them try to stop us. Just let them try.
It was only a tiny room, bare 20 feet square. There was a door leading into the square in front of the university, so the public was able to enter the premises. It was a new world, and a wonderful one. I quickly went to work. Wouldn't that be right to say I prospered, even though I was able to make 3 quadrants a week at a profit of 40 shillings? But there was apparatus and material to purchase, and it was tight going. For extra income, I did a spot of mending. Spectacles, dislocated violins, fractured guitars, and the like. But I lived in my work, and I was splendidly encouraged. Around me were the men of the university. Dick, Robinson, Black, the discoverer of latent heat, and the searching, irresistible Adam Smith, economist and genius.
Diminishing returns. Haven't you ever heard of the law of diminishing returns, Dick?
No, never. But just what has that got to do with the problem with unemployment in the coal field?
What? Everything. It's a simple problem in mathematics. In the beginning, the coal mines prospered. The coal was near the surface and easily obtained. Then they sunk their shafts deeper as the coal veins were exhausted. Deeper and deeper. They reached the point where the cost of mining the coal was greater than the price they could get for it. Mm. The cost was greater simply because as they dug deeper, water seeped into the mine shafts and they had to pump it out constantly. This was an expensive process, a difficult one.
They thought that the new common engines were being used on the pumps.
They are in some cases, but with poor results. No, engines are not the answer.
Good engines might be.
What do you mean by good engines, Jamie?
Good engines are engines that will produce a maximum amount of energy on a minimum amount of fuel. Engines that will utilize the basic force of fuel.
But the newcomer engine is considered to be the very finest accomplishment along this line. It's the result of years of experimentation with steam. Do you think there's a better means of obtaining mechanical power than by the use of steam?
No, Professor Dick. As a matter of fact, I claim only that Newcomen's engine does not use the power of steam.
Eh?
It doesn't, you know. The steam in that engine merely produces a vacuum. It's the weight of the atmosphere pressing the piston down into the vacuum that provides the power.
Is there any other way of forcing the piston down?
I don't know.
Have you thought about the problem?
Oh, yes, I've thought upon it, but there's so much that I don't understand. The nature of steam, of heat itself.
Have you spoken to Robinson about the problem? Or Black?
I've wanted to, but...
But what?
I'm not a student enrolled at the university.
You're better than that. You're a paying tenant. Talk to them, Jamie. Get their ideas. Let them have yours. Experiment. Search. Find your answer, Jamie.
If you really think it'll be all right, I'll...
Of course it will be, lad.
Then I'll find the answer.
Great months followed. The laboratories of the university were green pastures. I found the invigoration of inquiry, the joy of searching, the keen satisfaction of discovery. I wanted to know about steam. All there was to know about steam.
Mm-hmm. That's boiling nicely now.
May I have the thermometer, Professor Black?
Aye. Here you are, Jamie.
That's the most curious thing I've ever seen. Hey, look here, sir.
Yeah?
The temperature of the water, 212 degrees.
Right. 212 degrees.
Now, when I take the thermometer out of the water, but keep it in the steam, you see here, the mercury remains the same, 212 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Naturally.
Naturally?
Aye, of course.
But, sir, I don't understand. There's just so much heat in the water, just so much. If some of it escapes into the steam, the temperature of the water should be lower. And the temperature of the steam should be less than 212 degrees. It's simple subtraction. Take one amount from another, and the result is two amounts, both less than the original.
Ah, it's fine logic, Jamie. But nature isn't always logical.
Oh, no, lad, not at all.
In this particular case, Dame Nature is at her most illogical. What you see here is an example of the phenomenon known as latent heat.
Latent heat?
Aye. I've observed it before. There is something about the nature of steam that's unexplainable by all our known laws of physics. But it's there. A kind of hidden heat. Latent heat.
Well, here now. Jamie, don't look so puzzled. I'll give you a better example.
I wish you would.
Suppose we took two kettles, each filled with 100 pounds of water at 60 degrees.
Yes.
Now visualize that.
Two kettles filled with water at 60 degrees?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Now, into one kettle we pour 1 pound of water at 212 degrees. In the other, we inject 1 pound of steam, also at 212 degrees. The weight of both kettles would be the same.
Yes.
And what about the temperature of the water?
Well, that should be the same, too. Both the water and the steam were heated to 212 degrees.
But it is not the same. The kettle in which we poured water now has a temperature of 62 degrees, up 2 degrees.
Yes, and the other, the one in which we injected hot steam.
Ah, that little kettle, Jamie, lad, now has a temperature of 72 degrees, 12 points higher.
In other words, steam contains hidden heat, hidden power.
Right you are, lad.
You knew of this before?
Aye, naturally.
But why haven't you written about it? Told the world about it.
I will. I intend to. But I've been so busy teaching, you know. It's quite a strain. And besides, there's no special hurry. The world has managed to survive all these years without that morsel of knowledge. I think it may so continue for a while longer. After all, who cares very much about latent heat?
I cared. That was the answer I had been searching for. If I could produce an engine 6 times as powerful as Newcomen's, 6 times as powerful, what a dream. What a magnificent dream. But how? I went to work on an old Newcomen engine that I found at the university.
There you are, Jamie, with your nose in a pot of steam as usual.
Hello, Professor Dick.
How's it coming?
Very badly.
Huh? What seems to be your trouble? Or don't you know?
Oh, I know, all right.
Hey, what is it?
Loss of heat. I've been trying to make steam push the piston up.
Push it up?
Yes. Instead of the driving force of the engine being produced by the piston falling to fill a vacuum, I actually want hot steam pressure to force it up.
Ah, I see.
But it just won't work out. I lose 4/5 of my steam.
Huh? Why?
Because it enters a cold cylinder. You see, to make a perfect steam engine, it'll be necessary that the cylinder should always be as hot as the steam that enters it.
Cylinder to be always as hot as the steam that enters it? Well, why not?
It can't be done. Not with this engine, in any event. The cylinder is always cooled at the top because it's open to the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's cooled below by the jet of water necessary to condense the charge of steam and the creation of the vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see. It's a difficult problem.
4/5 of the energy in my steam, its latent heat, is wasting in heating up a cold cylinder before it can reach the point where it moves the piston.
Well, now, suppose...
It's no use. It can't be done. I might just as well have given up this foolish idea months ago. All the time I've wasted, the money, the effort.
Oh, now, Jamie, be patient, lad.
Patient? Oh, Lord, patient. Patient with a problem that's as unsolvable as the universe, as pointless as the ocean?
Oh, it isn't that bad. Don't you see, Jamie, lad, you have the principles of your engine set in your mind. It's only the apparatus that's defective.
Only the apparatus? Only? You mean I have a theory, but the only thing wrong with it is that it's completely unprovable.
How do you know?
Oh, please, sir.
How do you know? Have you really tried to work the thing out? No, you haven't, Jamie. Not the right way, you haven't. You've attempted to convert this apparatus of Newcomen's into an engine utilizing the pressure of steam. That's wrong. Make your own apparatus, Jamie. Design your own. You're the finest instrument maker in Scotland. Use your talents, your ingenuity. Find some method of maintaining a constant temperature in your cylinder, and there you'll have your answer.
What sort of apparatus?
Now, how would I know? All I can do is to tell you to make it. Making it is your problem.
No, solved.
Solve it. Stretch out your hand to grasp the mist at daybreak. It's there. You know it's there. But look into your palm. Nothing. Yeah, that's how I felt as I labored, tortured myself with my problem. It was a fine Sunday afternoon, early in 1764. I was walking with my cousin, Miss Miller, who later I was to make my bride. My conversation must have been less inspiring than usual.
Oh, Jamie, sometimes I think that there's nothing else in your mind than steam. We've walked all the way here from the commons, and all I've heard is steam, steam, steam. I'm sick of it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, if you cannot find any other subject of conversation, then...
I can. I can talk about you.
Very well. I suppose that will be a little more interesting than steam.
Just a little.
It's a wonder you ever noticed me at all.
Oh, but I do. I think you're... You're...
Oh, what is it, Jamie?
You're...
Jamie.
It would. Of course it would.
What would? Jamie, what?
It would have to. It's elastic.
Elastic? What is elastic?
Steam.
Oh! Oh!
Being elastic, it will rush into a vacuum.
I...
If a pipe were placed between a cylinder and an empty vessel, the hot steam would rush off and be condensed.
Well, I never...
It won't remain in the cylinder to cool. So the cylinder will maintain a constant temperature.
Jamie, what? I hear not another word.
Separate the condenser from the cylinder, and then the cylinder will always be as hot as the steam that enters it.
That is enough. Good day, James Watt. Goodbye.
And so I built my first engine. I led the steam out of the cylinder into a separate vessel. I closed the top of the cylinder to prevent the escape of steam. And my crude apparatus, it... Listen. It was a moment of supreme triumph. The revealing of a dawn. A secret plucked from the limbo of undiscovered truth. A condenser. A closed cylinder. Just that. Later, I would make a number of improvements in my steam engine. Provide for reciprocal action so that a constant smooth action would be maintained. Later, Stevenson would put my engine on wheels, and the wheels on iron tracks, and railroads would be born. Later, Pitt would put my engine in a ship, and the ship would move against the tide. Later, the ingenuity, the irrepressible genius of man, would find a thousand more uses for my engine. But that Sunday afternoon was a moment of triumph, the climax of centuries of searching for the power to harness steam. And that moment was mine.
You have been listening to a dramatization of the life of James Watt, brought to you by your Science Magazine of the Year. The Science Magazine of the Year is a presentation of the Armed Forces Radio Service for servicemen and women everywhere. Armed Forces Radio Service.